Hello and welcome to another edition of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham, and this show is brought to you in association with the fantastic OldFootballShirts.com. Well, the international break last weekend has given the so far goalless Albion a chance to recharge the batteries and refocus ahead of today's visit of West Brom, who we play for the first time since 1993. Three World Cup goals during the break from Albion players had slightly eased the concerns of those worried about us not landing a striker during the transfer window. Who knows, though, with goals coming from other sources than strikers, maybe the club has saved itself £20 million. Joining me today is, as ever, a man fresh from watching Bob Booker's sweet derriere strutting to the sights and sounds of Freddie Mercury. It is the portly Alan Wares. You wrote this, Al.
No, I didn't.
And joining us today, we have two people who we're absolutely delighted to welcome. They are two of Brighton's women's senior staff now. We welcome back Albion Women's Assistant Manager Amy Merricks, and for her first appearance on the show is Ladies Captain and Republic of Ireland International Sophie Perry. Welcome. We're here.
Thank you.
We're in this boiling hot studio.
I think that's more than people want to know, to be honest.
Yeah, I know. Me and Al have had a hell of a week. How's your week been?
It's good. Busy.
Yeah, really busy week. Been training all week, so.
And yeah, you've got the big kickoff coming up. How soon is that now?
Not far away at all. We're just under 3 weeks.
Yeah, and so the first game is, this is 24th of September, isn't it? And
he's done his research, even if you haven't, Amy.
Yeah. And you are away to Aston Villa Ladies.
Yes, we are, yeah. Big away trip to start us off, but no, we've trialled it already once in pre-season, the journey with the game, so.
But, I mean, obviously this is your first year in Women's Super League 2, or WSL 2, as it is normally known. So, I mean, how have the preparations changed from what it was like in the old Premier Division to what it is now?
I think it's in terms of making sure that we're ready for the amount of fixtures that we're going to handle with. We've got 30 plus fixtures depending on how far we go in the cups. So when you look at it that way, that is a very busy period, and we go through 2 weeks where there's consistent week games as well as weekend games. So how are we going to manage that on a weekly basis, and how are we going to prepare the girls to be able to deal with that as well? So very different in terms of what we do, but I mean, we change it every year anyway. We always review what we've done, and we always want to better ourselves. So hopefully, you know, we'll get some feedback from the players on what we've changed and how they've liked it.
And Sophie, welcome to the show. Did you know that your wiki page still lists you as a Reading player?
Oh, does it?
Yeah. Well,
that's not
very
good.
Nice,
you're going to have to have a word with them about that.
Well, no, you can actually. I was tempted to edit it myself, actually. But
okay.
need citations or
just
something.
As a heads up for our listener at home, could you just quickly explain to, well, take as long as you like, actually, to explain the roles that you have within the club? You're assistant manager, Amy. What does that mean you do?
So I look after a lot of the first team, women's first team operations. At the moment, pretty much overseeing majority of it, and then obviously Hope will come on board and I'll become a number two, and we'll work together in moving it forwards. Yeah. I also oversee the pathway as well. I oversee the development squad, so that's our under 23s.
What's pathway?
Our whole women's talent pathway at Brighton. So that's from the RTC, George Paris and Kevin Farm head that up, and that's under 10.
You're still talking in riddles. What's RTC?
It's our regional talent club.
Right. Okay.
And we hold a tier one license for that.
Right.
So we're top of the country with that. So, yeah, like I was saying, that's overseen from the under 10s through to the under 16s.
That's where George Paris is involved.
Yeah, George Paris and Kevin Farm are involved with that.
Okay.
And then we progress on to 16 to 19 year olds, which is the college program, which I oversee at the moment. So it's where I come more on board with that. We're also in a category one of that too, so working at the highest level again. And then we start moving into the development squad, which is our version of the under 20s, under 23s. At the moment, Curtis Foster and Emma Wood lead on that. So obviously hands-on, and we want to oversee that as well, so we make sure that players are coming right through that pathway into the first team.
I think we probably asked you this question before, but do all of you girls, are you actually aware of George Paris's standing within the folklore of this club?
Oh, of course, yeah. We've seen the videos, we've heard the nicknames.
Yeah. Is he still dining out on it?
Yeah. He always comes up with little little phrases during the day, and I say, oh, should I check my shoulder there? And
Sneaky
everyone's George, well aware, and we've seen, we saw his technique during the spring series, a few of the sessions.
He's still got a technique.
Oh, yeah, a few nutmegs came out and all sorts.
Sophie, you're team captain, yeah?
Yeah.
Tell us about your time here at the Albion, you know, as captain, what that means you do. Actually, let's start with, you know, how you got to be at the Albion in the first place. You, I mean, according to Shiny over there, you were Reading once upon a time. So how did you get to be here?
Well, as Amy was saying, through like the RTC, I went through that pathway. But back then it was called the Centre of Excellence. So, I started playing for Brighton when I was 12 and went through the whole RTC. And then played for the first team when I was 15, 16.
Wow.
So, to now be captain is a big honour and, you know, something I don't take for granted.
I mean, it says here that you started your career with Hove Park Rangers Girls.
Yeah, I did. I started off just as a grassroots club. So I was at primary school and one of the teachers, put me in contact with a local club. So I started with them and we used to play against Brighton. And, made the move over to Brighton.
I mean, was it something that you just said, look, can I come and play, or did you get talent spotted?
Talent spotted, so they
The lady to my right here.
No,
I wasn't involved far back, no.
Yeah, she probably would have been about 10 then.
Easy.
You sort of get talent spotted and then get invited along. I haven't looked back since, really.
What's your regular playing position?
I'm a defender, I actually started as a striker. Sort of come back each year. I play a defender. I like to get forward, more attacking minded. Enjoying it there.
Fantastic. Well, to be captain is, like you say, quite the honour, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is an honour. And, sort of from being there from 12 years old and sort of being there now and seeing the youngsters and that come through, like, I want to be a role model for them, and hopefully I can give everything this year and we can push on.
Because you also had a spell with Chelsea as well.
Yeah, so when I got to... So through the RTC, when I got to like the 16 to 19 part where you sort of go to an academy, I went to Arsenal. I was there for a couple of years and then I went on to Chelsea. I stayed at Chelsea for 8 years, so I actually played in the first ever Super League game. It was Arsenal v Chelsea, so it's really nice now to be playing for Brighton in the Super League.
How did you get on at Chelsea then?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it at Chelsea. Loved my time there. Made the FA Cup final 1 year, which was a great experience for us. So I have really fond memories and lots of good friends there, and we're actually going to be playing them in a Continental Cup, so I look forward to going back.
The Continental Cup?
Yes.
Is that the FA Cup? Or no?
No, it's our League Cup version, but there's lots of new rules around it with regards to if you draw a game and it goes into penalties and then you lose on penalties, you can still claim 2 points.
Oh, right, so it's very similar to what the rules I've got in the JPT, whatever it's called, the Checker Trade Trophy.
Yeah. Silly trophy.
Which we're in for some reason.
Yeah, happily losing to MK Dons, the club that has no right to exist. But let's not go down that road because that's a well-trodden path on the Albion rule, believe me.
Okay, well, you're playing all of your home games at the moment at the Sussex FA headquarters, which is at Cole Road in Lancing.
Yeah.
You did actually have a game at the Amex a couple of years ago where
it was a
record breaking attendance in the pouring rain. So, is there any chance? Are you planning on going?
I mean, we had one at the end of the spring series as well against Sheffield and had a really good turnout with that one too. I think we had just over 1,500 fans there.
Brilliant.
So, I mean, hopefully, as long as, you know, the club is so facilitating for us, and it's such an honour when they allow us to use the pitch, because the amount of fixtures they have for the men's first team, and we understand that's a priority, but, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, we get another opportunity to play there again, because, you know, it's a bit of an icing on the cake as well when we get to do it towards the end of the season, and who knows what that game could mean.
Absolutely.
You started here before Lancing was built, though, didn't you?
Or was it about the same time? I've been at the club for nearly 3 years now.
Right, don't make me rewind to actually when Lansing opened. I couldn't tell you. I think it's probably about the same time.
It was under Sammy, Hoopier.
I suspect Amy was waiting for Lansing to open before she finally jumped the ship, because you came from Millwall, didn't you?
Yes, I did, yeah, that's correct.
I wondered if anyone was going to bring that up. I thought it was going to be me.
Well, I've done it now, so. Let's rewind a season and a bit. And we've got to say a season and a bit, because you won, was it the National South Division, and well, that seems like 2016, for which you then had a playoff. But that 2016 or 15-16 season, that was well, we destroyed that division, didn't we? I'm going to say we, because anything that's got Brighton and Hove Albion in front of it, whether it's the ladies' team. Sorry, is it the ladies or the women's team?
It's women's, isn't it?
Is it? Sorry, okay, yeah. Fine, we've got that sorted. Okay, the women's team. If it's got the women's team, if it's got the power chair team, if it's got the amputee team, I'm a big fan of it. So I'm going to say we. So when we won that division, tell us about that season. I mean, you know, I think you just about beat all comers, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, well, we look back on it and literally smile, because we won everything that year. I think as a team, we just seemed to bond so well. And, you know, to go the whole season and, you know, not really slip up and go the whole way and win it was, you know, something that we're really, really proud of. And then to go through to the playoffs, which was our aim, which, you know, we won the league, but we knew that wasn't the end. We knew we had to then go on and win the playoff as well. And to win the playoff in the way we did, I think, you know, it was exceptional.
Because you went a goal behind in that game as well, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we went a goal behind. So it showed, like, massive character to come back.
You're being modest here, aren't you, Sophie? Because you scored a worldie, didn't you?
Well, if you say so, yeah.
It was a free kick.
Made the most of the celebration as well.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, that season, remind me, in the league you went unbeaten, was it? Or was it lost one or two out of 22, something like that? It was.
Yeah, I think we lost one.
Yeah.
I think it was one that we lost.
Yeah, and you did well in the cup. And if I remember rightly, you actually lost to the team that you beat in the playoffs. Does that sound about right? Sporting Albion?
Yeah, we did. We had them in the cup, and then obviously we had them in the playoffs, so we knew what we were coming up against. So, yeah, going into that and obviously winning, got a little bit of revenge on them.
I was about to say, sorry, go into that day at Wickham. It was the playoff final against Sporting Albion. I've got to say this because I know I was there. There was a touch of sort of the women's equivalent of Cardiff here, because it was a beautiful sunny day, lovely setting, plenty of people supporting you there. You know, did you think, oh, you know, this is it? Were you nervous? I mean, tell us about your day.
Well, to be honest, I can't really remember some of it because, you know, nerves do take over. I remember that morning we went for a team walk and everyone was just so quiet. And you sort of just had a look around and you sort of just made eye contact. And even on the coach, like, it was just dead silence. Everyone had their music on, just getting in the zone. And, yeah, like, we were nervous because we knew what was on the line.
What were you listening to?
Oh, a mixture. I can't even tell you what's on my playlist.
as gaffer then, or as deputy gaffer, how did you get the girls together? How did you get them to, you know, motivated?
Do you know what? I don't think we needed to motivate them to some extent. And we used, on the morning of the day, we used some video footage of messages from players from the development squad, injured players that weren't a part of the squad, long-term injuries, saying good luck to the girls, staff in and around the training ground that weren't going to be there. And I think that was was a really nice idea and would help push the girls. But I think there was a lot of stuff in the press because it was a difficult time and we had quite a few players that left before the playoff final game that we became the underdogs.
There was a big gap between winning the league and the playoff final game,
yeah,
wasn't there?
And we became the underdogs. Mm. And everyone was, you know, didn't expect us to turn up and expected it to kind of be a bit of a meltdown. And that motivated the girls. And we didn't actually have to say much. Them reading them articles and these bits and pieces online. And it was just, you know, you could just tell that morning that, like Sophie said, everyone was quiet. But they were getting ready. They were getting themselves pumped up. And even though we were only 1-1 at half time, there was this real atmosphere in the changing room and everyone just believed that we were going to win it.
Did you know at the time that the likes of Tony Bloom and Derek Chapman and Paul Barber were going to be there? I mean, did that make a difference, you know, whether you knew that or not? Or
I had no idea. And for them and Chris Hughton as well was there. And
Yes, he was.
To turn around
yes.
and see them in the crowd, it's just like, wow. You know, it's great. We're so supported, so supported. Not only that, you'd walk past one of them in the corridor and they want to know about how things are going, you know, how things are developing. And Chris takes time out of his day. He'll come and sit and have lunch and just chat football to me. So how are the women getting on?
So when you're doing stuff, I mean, whether it's your training, you're at Lancing or at something like, you know, that particular playoff final at Wickham or something like that, you've got, and I can actually, I think I can answer my own question most here, because I know that obviously with the power chair team, when they have to play in Nottingham every 6 weeks or so, and the last season when the Albion played against Nottingham Forest away, the Albion team and the power chair team stayed in the hotel. And they all made a point of getting together. Well, certainly the first team made a point of getting together. You know, this is another Brighton and Hove Albion team. You know, they'll all sort of mingle together.
To be honest, I don't think Matt Francis would have given them much choice.
Not as such, but the point is that they kind of respect each other as first team players, whether you're in the power chair team, whether you're in the men's first team, or in the ladies, women's team, in the women's team, that, you know, Chris can actually sit down and talk through things with you.
Yeah, and it's not only that, it's also the likes of events, end of season awards. The girls, we're always invited. The women's team are always a part of that. And you go back to like the parties that we've had or the end of season awards, and men's team talk to the women's team exactly how you're saying. We are one.
As fellow pros,
you know, yeah.
I take my daughter to the Christmas party, and you guys are all there, and we're
great ambassadors for the club.
And at the parade at the end of the season, you lot are all there as well.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, even down to when I was in charge of the development squad, Liam Rosinho, I brought his two daughters to a game as well, and that's even just a development squad, a game at the training ground, and you know, it's that environment where we are all supporting each other to reach effectively the same goal.
So back at Wickham, Sophie,
yeah,
you scored a worldie. Did I point that out to you?
Yeah, you did.
Can you talk us through it?
Pointing that out. Well, basically, it was a free kick. Set myself up for it. Knew where I wanted to put it, and luckily enough, it went in. And then I thought, right, I'm going to have a nice little celebration here.
Go on.
Wanted to slide on my knees.
That watered the pitch,
yeah.
But it wasn't that wet, so I didn't really slide that much. I sort of just stopped.
Took several layers of skin off your knees.
But it was worth it. So.
Okay, when we say it was
like a 5-year-old at a wedding.
yeah.
I can say like this. That. Maybe, obviously, you've got a different view. But we're talking about basically a free kick just outside the edge of the box. It was, I think we were 3-1 up at the time. And Sophie took it, and it was a left-footed one into the kind of the near corner. It wasn't a curler into the far corner. Keeper had no chance. Like I said, I've got to be honest with you, I don't remember the celebration. I think we were just sort of busy cheering ourselves. And I think that kind of set the tone. To be fair, Sporting Albion never gave up because they came back with another goal, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
I mean, your goal was what, probably 10 minutes from the end of time, something like that?
Yeah. And do you know what, in a game like that, you sort of don't. You don't care how they come, you know. It could have come off my shin.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to.
It's a cup final.
It is a cup final. Yeah. A win's a win. So tell us about the celebrations afterwards, or was that sort of what goes on there stays there?
The celebration after. Well, we had 8 months to celebrate because we had to wait until.
That was the question I was going to ask actually, because I mean it was because of the restructure of the Super League and it going back to being. An autumn, winter, spring league. You won promotion, and normally you have to wait a couple of months, do your pre-season, and then it's there. But that didn't happen for you, did it?
No, it didn't. We had to wait until the spring series because they were changing it, obviously, back to a winter league. So we did have a long wait, but you know, some people use that as a time to sort of unwind and relax. Some people use that as a time to go out on loan and keep ticking over.
Do you feel like you lost momentum, though? Because you did lose a lot of players in the interim as well, didn't you?
I don't feel we lost momentum. I think it was such an intense season and it was really draining. I felt like we needed that. We needed that time away and a time to sort of relax or, you know, go and play somewhere else. So I didn't really feel like we lost momentum.
But what you've got here is you've got a sort of a sense of logic which only the FA could come up with. Like I say, they've got the Women's Super League, which until just now was previously a summer league, whereas all the others below it were a winter league. So if you got promoted to that, you had to wait a year before you'd start. So, I mean, the spring series, they just...
It really makes no sense, really.
It makes absolutely... I mean, this is why the spring series probably had to start, if only just to have the start of a summer thing. So they've had no winter of playing football, in the time, obviously, the Albion, the men's team have won their promotion. A tournament throughout the spring and summer before now that the work starts again. So, like I said, where were we now? It was May, so that's a good 16, 17 months between you winning promotion and actually being...
Yeah.
I must have driven you around the twist.
Yeah, do you know what, Liz? It's pros and cons about it. The spring series was great because we got a taste of what we need to do for Super League 2, what we need to do to be the best, and what we need to do to avoid the bottom half table. And we got a taste of that with... out having the pressure of promotional relegation. So there is pros and cons around it, and we have a real understanding of the league now and the players involved in it, and what we need to do as a team and a squad to push on. So I would say that we had a great opportunity to go in and taste with the spring series and move from there, and now we're probably more prepared than what we would have been if we went straight into the start of a new season. So and there's probably teams in Super League One where they also did the same. Teams that got promoted like Bristol, Yeovil, they've had that taste during spring series. It helps you so much to be able to build in the right way.
Sure. And you've had, like I mentioned, a turnover of players there. And someone like Emma Byrne, who's a big name in women's football, isn't she? And she came in for, it was just really the spring series she played for in the end, wasn't it? But she's gone. Faye Baker's gone. So you currently have no goalkeeper. So who are you, is it Rush Goalie or is it...
I'll play.
The transfer window closes on Thursday, so hopefully there'll be some exciting news coming up.
Absolutely.
So and we're going to talk about the new gaffer in a bit, but has she had a big influence on who's going to be coming in?
Yeah, me and Hope have been communicating near enough every day. She's known exactly what's been going on, all kinds of dealings, and we've been working together on making sure that we've got a really good squad ready to reach our targets that are coming up. So communications are there, and Hope very much involved already.
So when the season, previous season finished, and you're into Women's Super League 2, I think isn't an either a Premier League or an FA stipulation that it's kind of going to be an increase or a change around in the structure and the setup. I mean, I think the club also had to prove its professional worth after you beat Sporting Albion, that there had to be all these various behind the scenes changes to make sure you were compliant. So, do you want to let our listener know what the club had to do in order to make us WSL2 ready?
Yeah, there's a lot of light. We actually have to meet an off-field licence requirement as well. Right. So no matter if we won that promotion, if we couldn't meet the licensing requirements off-field in terms of funding, facilities, match day venues, attendances to games, then we could have effectively stayed in the Premier League if we didn't meet them requirements.
What were the requirements? I mean, did the Albion tick them before you went up anyway?
Yes, there's a presentation... Paul Mullen actually took the lead on it and went to the presentation, presented to the FA how we felt that we met the requirements and probably beyond that as well. Mm-hmm. And that they were extremely happy. But they don't tell you until after the game whether or not you're ready. So, I mean,
is there kind of a bit of sort of slack that if you weren't ready that day, look, you can be ready, we'll give you X days, weeks to actually sort this out?
I'm sure that they'd say, look, we need you to make sure that by the time playoff final comes that you know how you might be able to deal with this and this. We're not too happy about that, how can you adjust that? So I'm sure they'd do that. They wouldn't just cut you off, they'd give you an opportunity, which is, I'm sure that's why you present to them early before the playoff final game.
So didn't you have because you also have to have a dedicated member of the on the board of directors, someone dedicated to the women's team, don't you? And I think before, now we'll talk about the current incumbent beforehand, you had Derek Chapman, didn't you? What was he like to work under?
Oh, he was great, yeah. He still comes to the games now, and
he's a convert, isn't he?
I spoke to Derek about this a few weeks ago, and he's an enthusiastic person in any way. Yeah. But he was like, he's absolutely in awe of you guys. Absolutely,
Every time I see him, he shows a real interest still, and you can tell that he just really loves the setup that we have and what we're trying to achieve. And I think when people are in and around it, they see how much I guess, our players deal with, because they still have full-time jobs, or mm-hmm. they're running around, they're going to university, and then they're still training and they're still fully committed. So it's like a different world. And I think he sees how much the players do, and yeah, he was great to have around the setup, and he still is involved.
But you've now got a different person? Is Derek sort of the designated board member, or is that the role that's been taken by Michelle Walder now?
So Michelle Walder heads up pretty much our women's main board, and she's also on the main board for the club. So we have our own separate board directors for the women's team too, and that's people like, obviously, Michelle Walder's on it, Martin Perry, Kirsty Holland. You've also got marketing lead on there as well, so we've got a real good mix that oversee the women's setup.
Got ya.
Okay, but before we move on, talking about marketing, we've just lost our good friend to Bristol Rovers, Mr. Gorringe, but he was responsible in putting together a promotional video for you guys.
Oh yeah, it was superb.
It was awesome, wasn't it?
Tom Linton and Adam worked really hard with it, but yeah, I think myself and the girls and Kirsty will really miss Tom, because he pushed a lot for us and he did a lot for us.
Could you ever hear him when he talks?
What, Tom? Yeah. Just well, about.
Just whispering Tom Gorringe.
Do you want to turn the mic up a little bit higher, Ady? No, I've got to say, seriously, I mean, like I say, I think Albion's loss is Bristol Rovers' gain, and we wish Tom all the best at Bristol Rovers, and I think that he'll do a fantastic job down there, and we wish him, you know, and just say, Tom, if you ever do listen, don't forget where your friends are.
Indeed. But you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm here with Alan Wares. I'm here with Sophie Perry and Amy Merricks, and we are brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com.
Well, you like at identifying football shirts, you two?
Oh, we could give it a go, yeah.
All right, here we go.
This is perfect for Sophie. I'm just going to pass this over to you.
Could you describe that, please?
Could I describe it?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's white.
Mm-hmm.
There is 6 red lines going down the side, twisting, and then going up the right arm.
Right, so
it's
yes.
It's making me think about Japan.
I can see why.
I thought Japan sort of thing. Yes, it's kind of, they're not vertical, they're converging red and white stripes.
Yeah.
But then when you get to the badge, it then twists back on itself, kind of almost helter-skelter-like. Can you read the badge?
Chinese. F. 35?
F-35?
Yeah, with a circle going around it.
Is it 95?
Oh, no, you better double check. Can't get it wrong.
Yeah, it's definitely 95.
F-95. Okay, AD, we have no idea. I can't even guess the country. What has Uncle Phil given us this week?
I think it would look cracking if it were in blue and white, he says.
Yes.
But it's pretty striking in whatever colours it is. I see what you did there, Phil. This is the 1990-91 home shirt of German Bundesliga 2 side Fortuna Düsseldorf.
All right.
Who we've just played, actually, pre-season, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Did we? I thought we were due to. I can't remember.
Yeah, we did.
Pre-season seems so long ago.
Yeah. The side is known as Le Flingergrane, and after the Flingern district of Düsseldorf, where they played at the 54,600 capacity Esprit Arena. In the 1991 season, they were managed by the Yugoslavian Aleksandar Ristić, with the side finishing exactly mid-table in ninth position. Uwe Fuchs was the top scorer, and he went on to turn out for Middlesbrough and Millwall. Amy?
Remember him well, obviously.
No comment.
later in the 90s. Also, in the team of 1991-91 season was the wonderful name Dirk Krumpelmann. Fortuna Düsseldorf.
Why do you do it as if you're a sort of an singing like an Oompa Loompa fella? I mean, is that your best German accent?
It's umlauts.
So? Okay, all right. Well, I've now got this vision of you in sort of lederhosen.
It's Krumpelmann.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. Oh, it's not Krumpelmann, because it'd be Krumpelmann if it didn't have the umlauts, you see. That's why it's Davy Plurper.
I can't believe I'm getting a lecture on linguistics from you.
Oh, that's the first.
Carry on.
In 2009, Fortuna set an all-time attendance record for the third level in football in Germany with 50,095 people who saw a 1-0 victory over Werder Bremen. There you go. Have a good show. I'll be the same, says Phil. Right, we've got to do some...
Sorry, can I just say, Phil, I hate you for that. That was just... You know, you've confused us all. You've given AD a load of German stuff. And yeah. I'll tell you who would have been perfect to have read that. Is Mark McGee on Wednesday, him being fluent in German. One thing that didn't come up on Wednesday, because although we've been promoting it for the past 2 weeks, if you want to come and see an evening with Booker McGee, frankly, you're too late now because we've already had it and we had a fabulous time. But there's one story that I did want to mention about Mark McGee and Attila the Stockbroker trading insults in German.
To be honest, I had written that question, but it just didn't come up.
Well, yeah. I mean, you wrote enough for about 5 shows, mate. So
that's funny. That might be another one coming up.
Well, yeah. I know. I wrote. I remember being there. It was after we'd just... After the single, the Albion's, the Seagulls' Scar single, had just got into the top 20. And we all piled down to the club in at the bottom of Preston Street, which forever changes its name. I think it was the BN1 club back then. And too
it was
many
the engine room.
You're quite right. It was the engine room, and too many crooks. As Seagull Scar turned up, Mark McGee, the manager at the time, came along as well. And obviously, Attila being a St. Pauli fan in Hamburg, and Mark McGee himself being an ex-Hamburg player, they just decided to trade insults in German. So it was hilarious to watch. I have no idea what they've said to each other. I think maybe he called Mark McGee a Hamburg pig or something like that.
But, I believe he did, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, but above and beyond that. So it was just, I wished we managed to ask Mark about that, but there was so much stuff to have got through. But thank you for everyone for coming along, because we had a brilliant night.
And as you may have noticed, there has been, if you've on our Facebook page or on our Twitter page, you might have noticed that there's been some video that's come out from Wednesday night.
Thanks to Jamie from Latest for filming that.
There will be a full video of the show that will be available. It's actually going to be on telly, believe
it or not. It will be on telly.
But it's going to be on the radio first, but we'll let you know when that's going to be.
Yeah,
but
not just yet.
But just to reiterate what Al said, thanks to everyone that came along. It was a fantastic night. I think everyone had a great time.
Well, we hope you did. We hope everyone who came along had a great night.
And tell your friends, because we'll do it again.
Absolutely.
But I've got something else here, which is just following on from a question we asked last week. We had an email from a chap called Bill Woods.
Not Bill Woods. Never heard of him.
No, I've never. Well, I have now.
Well, thanks for listening in, Bill.
And it's in regards to cricketing footballers. Okay. Which is the question we asked last week.
Yeah, I think we mentioned Dennis Foreman, and that was about it, wasn't it?
And he said, although it has no connection to either the Albion or Sussex. Well, there you go. Thanks, Bill. Chris Balderstone played for old First Division football for Carlisle.
Yes, he did.
And he played 2 tests for England as well.
Yes, he did.
And there we go. And we've also been contacted in our section.
One of the Comptons played for Middlesex and for Arsenal in England. So
we actually have 2 players that play cricket as well as football.
Go on.
They're both goalkeepers as well.
Go on.
One of them's in the academy and one of them's in the development squad, but I just thought, yeah.
Are they wicket keepers?
What, playing for Sussex?
I'm not too sure. One of them plays for Sussex. The other one has literally just moved down from Norwich, so...
Right.
Yeah, I just thought...
No, that's great.
Just a bit of a random...
Yeah, so you just be careful that you don't lose them to cricket if they, if you want to keep them.
But also, just to follow on from something else we've been doing over the last few weeks, we've had another entry for the Oversea Girls.
Oh, yeah, go on.
We've had an email from a chap called Cedric Stone. He says, hi, everyone. Responding to the roll call for the Overseas Seagulls. Mm. He listened in Toronto. He's a newish fan of your show. Thank you.
Has he met Paul Byrne yet then?
No, not yet. But I mean, anyone who's in Toronto, I mean, I think Paul is actually starting up a Toronto Seagulls
fans
group. So you can all get together and liaise and watch games. And anyone overseas, please contact us. We'll try and get you all together.
Put it out there on Twitter that if you're listening overseas, wherever it is you are, just let people know that you're there. And then because you'll have someone who's listening in LA, and then the next person's going to listen to, you have 2 people. Oh, I didn't know there was another Brighton fan there. Yeah. And do you know what? We could end up having, who knows, lots of divorces and people meeting up together and whatever.
But, I mean, Cedric is an expat, and it was a passion triggered by a summer family visit to his grandparents in Bolney Avenue in Peacehaven. And his first game was home to Norwich in 1978, according to this.
I'm loving did you see the post on North Stand Chat this week? Someone called, he called himself Big Sky Seagull, Big Sky Albion, I think it was. And I think that Minnesota's the Big Sky State. Mm. And he said that, having watched the FA Cup final from 83 between Brighton and Man United, he's chosen Brighton to be his team. But I think he said he's never been over to watch a game. And I think he's coming over for the Stoke game in November. And I just found it absolutely lovely story that of all things, that someone's going to be so...
They're going to watch Stoke.
Yeah, well, there's that. But someone who's never been to the Albion has no, I think, prior connection to Brighton and Hove Albion, apart from the sympathy of watching us getting stuffed by Man U in the cup final, and then finally getting the opportunity to come and see us. So, I think that hopefully, if we get the opportunity, I'd love to have that fella on, if only just to say, what on earth are you doing following us?
Have you guys noticed an increase of interest in what you're doing because of our promotion to the Premier League?
I would say yes. We naturally get an increase pretty much every week. More and more people are aware of it. The more that people talk about us, the more it comes out. And now that we're in the Premier League, I guess people want to find out exactly what the club's about. And we're going to be a part of that conversation, hopefully, because we are fully involved with the club.
Mm. Well, that was one question I was actually going to ask, because, the club are... I know it's not the same as every club. In fact, there's a lot of teams that in the WSL2 that aren't actually affiliated technically to a club or don't actually carry the club's name. But you are actually Brighton Hove Albion, aren't you?
Yes, yeah, completely. I've been at lots of different clubs in women's football and never experienced such a club that is fully a part of. There's a lot of clubs that you go in and it's like, right, okay, the women's section is just down there, and you go down like a 2 mile road and suddenly you're there, and it's never been so segregated. We share the same building. I used to share an office with the boys' academy coaches. Everything is fully integrated.
I mean, Sophie, you have access to all the facilities, and this is where you train. You have all the access to all facilities at Lancing.
Yeah, we do. So, where the men train, we train. So when we use the gym, we use the same gym as them. When we need to use a swimming pool, we use the same swimming pool. And, when we come into training, we've seen some of the players and we've seen Chris, and, they'll always say hello.
Are you a victim to the ice bath and things like that?
Yeah, we have ice baths. We have ice baths after every game,
right,
which I look forward to every time.
Amy, there's this kind of sort of knowing, smug, happy look on the face that you don't have to get into the ice bath.
No way. It's actually quite interesting. Some research came out. An ice bath only pretty much helps the players sleep after a game. There's not much recovery that it does do. But I just chucking the girls in there, it wakes them up a bit.
But I'd imagine a good night's sleep is actually probably
a hot day, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
A good night's sleep, and it does speed up the recovery process, but doesn't do that much more.
Well, you just said it speeds up the recovery process.
Not that much.
I'll be telling the girls this. Come Sunday, get in your ice baths.
It is a psychological thing.
Is it psychological, Sophie, or is it mad?
Mad.
you see people who are doing multi marathons and everything. They all get into an ice bath every night.
But they're mad in the first place.
It's perfect when we get into season or when we want to do a heavy session very close to a game and we have a second game coming up. That's the great time to use ice baths.
Yeah, when you need a quick turnaround.
Yeah, I think it works differently with different players as well. I know some of the girls really sort of love going in there and will do it throughout the week as well.
So, what is it supposed to be? Is it straight out of a cold bath into a hot bath, or is it you just sort of sit there in a bucket of ice or something, or how's it supposed to work?
You can do hot and cold. We've done hot and cold before, but after games, we tend to just go straight into ice, and we'll be in there for 6 minutes straight. And then when he says out, we are out of there as soon as possible.
Of all things, you play a hard game, and then you just go in and do an impression of a bottle of Prosecco.
Okay, well, we've got to talk about the new appointment, and you are now going to be the assistant, Amy, to the former England manager, who's done so much for women's football in this country and worldwide, actually. Yeah. And when you heard about that decision, how excited were you?
Oh, so excited. I've worked with lots of different managers now, but I think the experience and the knowledge of international level, as well as just being around the game and so many different people at that level as well, is just huge. So, yeah, very excited because you never know what people are going to bring.
Well, reputation as well, you mean? Or, this is sort of like kind of someone who's elevated, probably a few notches above what you're used to.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a lot more eyes on us than what we normally do, probably.
She's been out of the game since she's left England. So what made
no,
you...
She,
what,
no, they're in blind support. No, she hasn't. No,
she of hasn't. Management. She, I know she's okay. been involved. But, right. What made you think she chose to make a comeback at Brighton?
She came down to the training ground and had a lot of meetings with a lot of different people. And I think she got a real good feel for the club and what they were trying to achieve within women's football. And I think that was pretty much the key for Hope. And I think she enjoyed listening to the aspirations that the club have and how they intend to do it. And, you know, I think once anyone comes down and sees that and hears that from not just the players and the on-pitch staff, but I think from the people that are on the board and from people like Paul Barber, Tony Bloom, and when they're saying that that's their vision for women's football as well, you know, you do instinctively buy into it.
Okay, Sophie, what does it mean for you as a player?
Well, all of us are really excited and can't wait for Hope to come in. And I mean, you know, knowing a manager's coming in with so much experience and, you know, has coached some of the best players in the world, you know, we're excited to see what she's going to bring. And, you know, she's been in high pressured situations in tournaments and things like that. So, you know, our aim is to win the league. So we're really excited and can't wait.
So who's going to play good cop, bad cop, Amy?
I'm not sure, because from what I've heard, we're quite similar. So I think the girl's got it in, but I'll let Sophie make that decision.
Yeah,
but
I'll give it a couple of weeks and we'll try and work it out.
We'll have to get you back on and ask. Because, I mean, there's a touch of, I mean, we talked about him just a few minutes ago. There's a kind of a touch of the Bob Booker about you, in as much as you're the kind of sort of loyal person who knows everything. But would you like the top job here one day? Do you think you could progress that far?
At the moment, I'm in no rush and know what I'm learning, and I'm still, you know, there's so many things that I want to improve and learn and develop at the moment. So I'm in no rush and I'm in a really good place, and the opportunity to work under Hope Powell is incredible, and, you know, I'll bite someone's arm off for that opportunity. And even just to be in the environment and to be so close to so many great coaches at the club and being able to see and learn off of that too. Yeah, but of course, we all want to strive to be at the top. And I think if we don't have that hunger to do that, then we're never going to improve as people or in our careers. So I think it's important to have that strive. But of course, you know what, I just want to be a sponge and I just want to keep learning and developing.
That's what we're putting.
So, Sophie, you do actually play international football for the Republic of Ireland. And I mean, obviously, do you think Hope's going to be able to push you further and further in that, and that maybe help help the Republic go further, because it's like...
We don't want that, do we? What is your qualification for Ireland, by the way?
My dad's Irish.
Okay. But, I mean, as an international, I mean, obviously, you know, the irony is that a former England manager is going to be helping an Ireland player here. So, you know, what are you hoping to get from her as a player?
Well, just sort of like, you know, like when you're at club level, you want to be working as hard as possible. You want the training to be good. You want to be sort of week in, week out being challenged. And I think, you know, when you've got, you know, a coach like Hope Powell and also Amy, you're being challenged every day. And I think then going into international, the framework, it helps you and it gives you confidence as well. Mm. Especially when you're playing well at club level, you go into international and you're feeling confident and, you know, ready to go.
But you're not the only international in the squad. There's another one who's actually a Welsh international, and she's tipped for big things in the game, isn't she, in Bronwyn Tomworth?
Yeah, Bronwyn's, you know, she's been called up a few times for Wales, and she is an up-and-coming player, and she's got a bright future ahead of her, and, you know, having all the coaching by Amy and when Hope comes in as well, it's going to make her a better player and push on for the seniors.
So you mentioned that one person there, actually. I mean, with apologies to anyone they do leave out, but, you know, quickly run us through the squad there and tell us what you've got there if anyone wants to go and watch the women play, what there is they're going to see and the qualities that we'll get to watch.
Well, there is a few internationals in there. We've got Laura Rafferty, who plays for Northern Ireland, who we're actually playing in a couple of weeks' time in the World Cup qualifiers. So that will be interesting. Yeah, we've got a lot of youngsters, and we've got a lot of senior players as well. So we've got a nice mix. If you do come and watch us, we like to play football. We like to pass the ball around and build up play, and we like to go forward as well. And you'll always see 110% from us. As soon as we step out onto that pitch, like, we give everything and we play for the badge.
So that philosophy that you're talking about, Amy, that Sophie's talking about there, is, you know, getting down, getting the ball to play. Is that something that's been instilled, you know, within just the women's section of the of the club, or is it something that's kind of a philosophy that goes through the entire club, the men's and the women's teams?
No, we have a club playing philosophy that we try to take through every team, every department. So there's a great video as well where the boys under 10s are playing out from the back and through the thirds, and it looks exactly the same when you watch a men's first team. And we tried to replicate the same with a women's setup as well. It was one of the reasons why I came down to Brighton as well and wanted to join so badly. It fitted in with my style of coaching too. And I think it's important that when people come to watch us play, they see us playing attacking, positive football. But, you know, it's attractive. The ball's on the floor and players are looking to get on the ball as much as possible. And, you know, even the young crop of players that we have coming through are doing it with such ease at the moment. We played the WSL 1 side in pre-season last weekend, and some of the footage I was showing the girls back from us playing out from the back and in possession, you know, was superb.
Okay. Now, Sophie, you are from Brighton. Yeah. So you obviously, are you actually a Brighton fan?
I am a Brighton fan, yeah.
God for that, could be really awkward.
Yeah, I used to go to the 15 and watch the game, so, yeah.
Why'd you ask?
Well, because we've got a big game coming up this week, and yes.
Well, you think she might be a West Brom fan? Bear in mind that, you know, they totaled Sporting this time. You know, there this time
is,
last year.
I do know that there is a West Brom fan on the Brighton staff.
Who's that?
It's not. I'm not going to name names.
Steph. Are you?
It's not. Not
no,
on,
it's not.
Not
me.
On the playing staff. She's on the commercial Amy? Team. But,
is it you?
Not me. No.
Oh, so, okay.
I'm not naming names, am I, Steph? Anyway, but it is a big game. But we've got a lot of players out injured at the moment, or carrying knocks. So,
I think a few fans are carrying the knock as well.
But we've just lost Steve Sidwell for yes. 2 months.
I think that's actually going to be a bigger miss than people realise, because although Danny Proper clearly had an excellent time in the international circuit, probably playing in a position that he might well be more familiar with playing for the Netherlands, you know, where he's playing a much deeper role for us. I think that role is... I still think Sidwell still has it, you know, or he might, he's an old man in football terms. I think that's going to be a big miss, if only because it takes away some of our backup. Although I think a lot of people that, you know, might even say that Sidwell should be starting, but that's another debate for another time, which I know we haven't got time for today.
Well, Chris has actually said that they were looking at the possibility of recruiting another central midfielder, but they didn't think they actually had to because of Sidwell. So
yeah, I usually get that reaction. Yeah, when I say that. Yeah.
You'd fill a big hole out.
I'd fill a huge hole, yeah.
But, so quick on it as well.
Would you be holding or would you sort of...
Eating, mostly. Eating, yeah. Maybe a bit of drinking, you know.
If someone's saying who ate all the pies, he'd hold his hands up.
Yeah, carry on.
But I mean, when you're looking at the men's first team, and you're looking at and you see the formation that have been playing for the last 2 years, they've been playing basically a straight
4-4-2, isn't it?
Largely 4-4-2. So I mean, going into the Premier League, is that something that you would have looked to change, or would you stuck with what the personnel?
Don't get them to give away too many secrets.
Well, no,
you don't know who's listening.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No one, frankly.
But I mean,
with the philosophy you've got of the whole passing and going through the thirds and what you're talking about, I mean, is there obviously there's got to be flexibility within that?
Do
you have sort of like, you know, enough that you can say, right, well, we're going to start this game 4-4-2, but it's not working, we can go to 4-3-3?
In football, when you watch football, we all say, look, we're setting up with 4-3-3, and we had this conversation a few weeks ago with the girls. I mean, we want to be as adaptable as we can be because there's so many different formations out there. But when you watch a game, you go through so many different formations in the game anyway. You're not actually set in one formation, especially if you're playing in the way we want to play. We want to play through the thirds all the time. Then what if both your centre-backs get pinned in and you can't play out? You're going to have to drop into a back three to probably play out and get a CDM deeper. So you come in and out of formations all the time, and I think it's about, for the men's team, they're going through the transition of what we were in the spring series as well. And I think in time it's going to start clicking more and more, and
you can still see it
coming.
Isn't it?
It's just getting them patterns, them links in, getting them relationships between players, and they've definitely got the potential to do really well in the league and start getting their foothold. Yeah. And I think people saw that when they played Watford as well. So,
but you've probably seen a lot of the players in training. So which of the new signings have you been most impressed with so far?
With the women?
No, with the men.
I haven't seen any of the men in training, no. But
well, from the games then?
From the games. I think Proper, He looks promising, and obviously from international it shows that he can score goals as well, and you know, that's what we've been lacking lately, but hopefully a lot, sometimes when you go on international duty you get a lot of confidence and you come back to club level and you bring that with you, so same with Shane Duffy, he's been scoring as well, hasn't he? So
yeah. Well, he scored twice midweek, but only one of them counted. So.
What was the other one then?
One was disallowed. But
oh, right.
It was,
talking of new signings, have you heard Warren Aspinall's pronunciation of the new Colombian fella? It's Isquiardo. That's how he pronounces it. Yeah. So hashtag pray for Aspinall.
I'm going with El Pig.
Yeah, that'll be. I'm not sure what pig is in Spanish, so yeah, we'll have to come up with something. El Pig is just. That's horrible, actually, isn't it?
Well, you know, I'm still absolutely delighted about the fact
that
micro pig,
yeah.
It just fills me with great joy.
It's basically one up from a gonk, isn't it?
Does he?
Who's got a micro pig?
Izquierdo.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, he's got a micro pig.
And he's brought it over with him.
It's still in Colombia, but it may come up.
If it can come up. I mean, obviously, we're on radio, no one can see this, but Sophie's eyes have just lit up like a Christmas tree.
A micro pig?
Yeah. They're adorable, though.
I'd never heard of one before you said. You know,
I've seen them on like The Simpsons, but
well, yeah, on Simpsons they look cartoons.
That was a spider pig.
You still watch The Simpsons?
Is that spider pig? No, I don't.
Clearly need to get you in training more.
I can't believe you two didn't. Well, admittedly, I didn't know. I missed the interview, but you know, these two are just like, wow. So in that case, you're going to have to go up to him at Lancy next time you see him and say, you know, I don't know how your Spanish is, but tell me about your micro pig.
Well, it's an icebreaker.
It is an icebreaker, isn't it? Of all things, you're going to say, hello there. Would you like to see my micro pig?
But I was actually doing some research into micro pigs a while back when we were first talking about
it. Of course you were.
But there was a brilliant story of someone who bought a micro pig and it just turned out it was a piglet and it was actually it grew to a full size pig.
So Isquiardo, as Aspinall would say, has a micro pig.
Okay. Well, today we have the Albion Derby. It's the first time we've played the Baggy since 92-93 season.
Was that in the third? That would have been in the third division?
It would have been in... No, that
second
would have
tier
been,
or third tier?
It was second tier then.
Was it? Okay. And, I know they did get relegated to the third tier about, you know, in the 90s at some point, I think.
I think they've been bouncing around the top two divisions since.
I think they did do one or two seasons in the third tier. I'll check it, but not right now because I'm on a radio show.
It was, but I mean, when we got promoted to the top division, it was one of the games we did actually look out for because it's someone we don't actually play very often. I mean, Everton's the one.
Everton is the one that's the longest team we've played since
1983.
It's the longest. Longest gap in playing anyone. But, well, 24 years is a long enough time. And it's going to be a toughie. Tony Pulis takes no prisoners. It's you know, seriously underrated. I mean, all right, you don't go to watch Tony Pulis sign for football purity, but the effectiveness is there. And you've got to argue, you know, seeing as the prime reason behind football is for one team to score more than the other, and how it's done is another matter entirely. I mean, effectively almost a footnote. Sorry, dismissing Amy's role here completely, but, you know, it's... you know, Tony Pulis is a very effective manager and, you know, we've got a lot of players who are going to really need to toughen up and I mean, we're not exactly playing 11 bulldozers, of course not. But
I think it could play quite into our hands, actually. I mean, it's going to be playing against the land of the Giants.
Yeah.
And we've got a lot of people who aren't Giants.
You've got an idea that knockout will go through literally through someone's legs.
I've got Izquierdo and Solly March. Any one who can tie them in knots and trickery, it might be it's a case of don't take them on in the air. Anything like, and it could be a case of.
You reckon they're immobile, basically?
I'm not saying immobile, but I mean, I think it's getting balls in low into the box and having midfielders arriving late could be a good recipe.
Sophie,
for
get your boots on.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Yeah, okay.
Stick me in.
No, I mean, it's who knows? I mean, it's all right. West Brom are not one of those sort of big top six teams, and therefore you think there's a sniff of a chance that we'll get something. But every single game, all 38 games this season are going to be toughies. Even Palace at home at the moment, managed by Frank Despenser, it's going to be everything is. you know, no. I mean, let's put it this way. Even if you think that Palace are going to be sort of like forever staring down the trap door, you know full well they'll raise their game for us. Mm. So no games are going to be easy. It's going to be, you know, sort of squeaky bum time the whole way, which probably is actually on the banned list, but we'll come back to that another time.
Okay. Well, today's game is obviously at the Amex. But
is it?
It is. Strange, okay, that,
isn't
it?
3 o'clock kickoff?
But it is. And it's the last Saturday 3 o'clock game until the 4th of November. Which gives plenty of time for people to possibly get down to Lancing to watch you guys. Now, the first home game, which is against Durham, that's on Sunday the 1st of October.
That's really unhelpful, isn't it?
And kick-off's at 12 o'clock.
Yeah, really unhelpful.
Which is an hour before we kick off against Arsenal.
Who came up with that particular wheeze? I mean, I would have actually really liked to have gone because, you know, Culver Road's only around the corner from where I am, so...
There'll be plenty of other games.
It's just for...
The next one isn't till November.
Is that time set in stone now, though?
Can you move it for lack of TV?
Well, you know, I've been...
Alan Wes come down with his iPad. We need to change time.
I've been to Culver Road. They've got some nice TVs in the lounge. Absolutely. There. Yeah. So, you know, if you could delay kickoff until after that's finished, might get bigger attention. Yeah.
They need to improve the quality of their beers there, by the way. I mean, bearing in mind, you can drink a beer inside the pitch. I'm hoping for the women's team, they could do with some better beers there.
Yeah. What, like Worthing? Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Not that they can play there at the moment.
No, they can't play it. No, they've been told they can't. No, that's a ridiculous thing.
But apparently they are coming back.
Tell us about the pitch at Lancing, actually, because that's not a full-blown grass pitch, is it?
No, it isn't. It's a 3G pitch. It's fairly new as well, really well looked after. It suits the way we play, to be honest.
Have you done a sliding knee drop on that?
No. No, I wouldn't have any knees left.
No, okay. That's quite awkward for a footballer not to have any knees.
And talking of not having anything left, we haven't got any more time left. That is it, I'm afraid. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Alan Wares. Thank you to Amy Merrick. Thank you to Sophie Perry. I've been Aidy Packham. This has been the Albion War. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Cheers, bye. Live without tea.